Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
I was hired to assess the site's viability for future development. Your run-of-the-mill, routine topographical and environmental survey. The land parcel in question was flagged decades ago as a former settlement, some mining camp or agricultural commune that folded before the First World War. There were no confirmed structures left standing, just a few ghosted shapes on topographic overlays and a vague mention in a handwritten railroad manifest. The assumption was that nature had reclaimed it. The client was a state expansion bureau that needed confirmation before approving the site for rezoning. 3 days on foot, 2 days to log data. Out. Easy money. I reached the ridge near sunset. From that vantage, I expected overgrowth, ruin, maybe a few stacked stones swallowed by decades of erosion. Instead, I found a town sat nestled at the base of the valley like it had never been lost. Dozens of rooftops, chimneys trailing thin plumes of smoke, worn wooden porches, two-story homes with split-beam shutters and latticed windows. Not a single modern fixture in sight. No telephone poles, no asphalt, no signage beyond a small, warped placard nailed to a leaning post at the valley mouth. Burned into the wood. Merrow's End. And beneath it, carved faintly, almost like a whisper, for those returning. I started down the slope with careful steps, crunching through brush, expecting someone, anyone, to react to my approach. It was active, yet somehow still. Clothes fluttered gently on drying lines. A figure walked through the garden rows behind one home, dragging a hoe in even intervals. Smoke coiled upward from chimneys. I heard a creak as a door swung open somewhere deeper in. But no engines, no dogs barking or kids yelling. A woman passed me on the main road, carrying a basket of fruits bundled in cloth. She wore a bonnet, a thick skirt, and a weathered shawl. Her shoes were unlaced and smeared with something dark. She moved around me like I'd always been there, refusing to acknowledge me like old furniture. Some part of me, the part that spent too many nights alone in nowhere towns, just wanted answers. This place wasn't abandoned, which meant someone was maintaining it off-grid. I figured I'd knock on a few doors in the morning. Maybe someone would have a generator tucked behind the chapel, or offer up a real explanation. A man greeted me. He was standing on the porch with his hands folded in front of him, face lean but gentle, expression unreadable. "You'll want a room for the night," he said. I nodded. He handed me a brass key without requiring payment. "You'll want the room with a basin," he said, as I stepped past him and onto the porch. The inn was larger than it looked from the road. Two full floors with a long central corridor that swallowed sound. The floorboards were clean but worn thin in the centre, ground down from decades of use. There were no rugs or decorations. The walls were lined with frames. At first, I thought they were mirrors, but they were too dark for that. Instead, they were panes of glass clouded with soot, edges chipped, surfaces dulled by age. Empty frames, no names or plaques. Whatever had once been hung there had been removed, yet the nails remained in place. The man didn't comment as I looked. He simply turned and walked, lantern in hand, expecting me to follow to the end of the hall. Inside my room was bare. There was a narrow bed with tightly tucked sheets, a small writing desk bolted to the floor, a single oil lantern hanging from a hook at the ceiling, and at the foot of the bed, centered precisely between the posts, a wide stone basin. The water inside was dark, thickened, like rainwater left standing too long. It caught the lantern light poorly, swallowing most of it. I assumed it was for washing, old plumbing. I didn't touch it. I set my pack down and finally did what I should have done earlier, tried to log my arrival. But there was no signal. I tried punching in data regardless, coordinates, elevation estimate, structural count. The screen lagged, then froze. I wiped it clean, tried again. Same result. I put it away, hoping to try when signal returned. Outside, the footsteps had stopped. No wind through the trees. The quiet felt held in place, like breath waiting to be released. Sometime later, I don't know how long, I heard a sound from the foot of the bed, a slow, wet slosh. It wasn't loud or sudden, just the sound of something settling into a new shape. I sat up. The basin was still, the surface of the water hadn't changed. I leaned closer, lantern in hand. The water reflected the ceiling beams clearly enough, but the reflection showed more water than there was, filled higher, nearer the rim. I tilted my head. The level didn't change. I stepped back. Rest didn't come easily. I wasn't necessarily overwhelmed. There was nothing overtly strange that would put me on edge. However, all the little things set off a survival instinct in the back of my head. But eventually, I managed to get some sleep. At first light, I made a direct path toward the ridge, focused on getting out. I used the same trail I'd taken into the valley, mapped by memory and footpath. But in the daylight, things looked different. The road curved past the inn and split near a grove of low, gnarled trees. I remembered that clearly. But this time, the trail forked in a new direction, a fresh-cut path, smooth and trodden. Still, I climbed. My gut didn't settle. After 20 minutes of steady ascent, I reached the edge of a clearing I'd never seen, and beyond it, the same signage I'd passed the day before. Merrow's End, for those returning. The carving was identical, same angle, same split in the lower post. My boots made the same noise on the same gravel. I'd looped, except I hadn't turned once. Now, entering with the sun up, I could see the town had changed in my absence. The townspeople moved in synchronized cycles. I passed the root patch again and saw the same woman from yesterday, cutting the same crop in the same arc. Her knife never paused. I saw a man hanging herbs from twine near a crooked post, and when I passed by him half an hour later, he was still hanging them. Same motion, same plants, only the twine had lengthened. No one acknowledged me, not even in the passive, dismissive way they had before. They moved as if they were enacting a play. I tried knocking on doors, but most were locked. Inside the few I could open, there was nothing but unused furniture, arranged identically in each house. Then, I saw the children. Three of them stood in the narrow alley behind the butcher's shop, watching a beetle drag itself across the dirt coldly. They watched me for a few seconds in the corner of their eyes. They just didn't look, like I wasn't an object worth registering. Then I saw the youngest looking one blink. once, slowly, and the beetle stopped moving. In an overgrown field, a woman bent over a patch of grey, root-like vegetables, hacking at them with a curved blade. Nearby, a man dragged a whetstone along the edge of a billhook, his stroke steady and mechanical. A pair of goats were being led across the road by a child with a switch in one hand, not using it, just holding it upright like a flag. At the town square, I confronted an older man carrying an unlit lantern. "Where's the road out?" I asked. He tilted his head. "We prepare," he said. "Prepare for what?" He looked at me with unfocused, glazed eyes. "Some," he said slowly, "for longer than others." He sounded delirious. Nothing he was saying made sense. Then he walked past me and continued walking even after the road ended. That was when I saw the well. It sat in the square like an altar. A long rope hung slack down the shaft, still coiled with use. Around the lip of the stone were carved words, worn but legible. "All offerings must bear intent." The O in offerings was cracked through, as if something had been wedged into it. I leaned in to look closer. Inside the well, not far, I saw fabric, a sleeve, a shoulder, a body half immersed and bent wrong, like it had been folded inward and offered to the shaft. Their skin was pale and waxy, and their limbs pulled long and jointless, resembling the townspeople. I backed away and stumbled toward the church. It was open. Inside was quiet. Dustless pews and unlit lanterns lined the space, and the air smelled like stone and heat. I moved toward the altar. The pulpit was set to the side. The wall behind it was plain. But on the floor, I found a thin length of twine tied in a circle. Around it, the dust had been moved with purpose, lines jutted out in concentric angles. I couldn't figure it out. I stared, trying to apply meaning, but it just seemed too random. But when I tried to accept it was nothing, it pulled my mind in two directions at once. And then my mind tried to pull away, dismiss it as I saw it, just a shape. Yet I couldn't let it go until I forced my legs to take me back to the inn. I didn't sleep after what I saw. With no method to escape, I paced the room until the lantern burned out, then sat in the dark with the curtains drawn, listening to the faint movement of feet across floorboards that weren't mine. A murmur behind the wall, a quiet shift of the water in the basin, like breath trying to time itself with mine. At first light, I tried again to leave. Rather than head toward the trail I'd failed to follow the day before, I skirted the outer buildings, weaving behind the backs of houses and storage sheds, staying just far enough from the town centre that I wouldn't be seen, or worse, noticed. It was colder back there. The houses thinned into open ground behind the church, where the grass grew in tight circles, pale as bone. It wasn't the path I'd come in on, but it pointed toward the tree line, and that was enough. Near the slope's edge, I found a rusted iron gate wedged between two stone posts. The metal had slumped with age, its joints warped from old pressure. One side leaned open, just enough space to squeeze through. I stepped forward, pushing the gate wider with my palm. The metal gave and tore my hand open along a peeling weld. The pain was sharp, instant. I swore and stumbled back, cradling my hand as blood ran freely across my skin. Too freely. The cut was shallow, but the flow was steady, hot, unnervingly fast. I pressed my hand to my jacket to slow it, but the blood had already begun to trail across the soil, moving strangely, branching. Veins of red crept through the dirt, crawling outward in thin, impossibly symmetrical lines. The earth darkened where it passed, capillary thin rivulets spidering out in every direction. My mind went back to what I saw in the church. I backed away, chest tight, heart thudding hard enough I could feel it in my ears. The blood didn't stop. It was like it was forming a pattern. I don't remember getting back to the inn, having moved with urgency to tend to my wound in solitude. I just remember the act of slamming the door behind me, breathing through clenched teeth, then crouching at the foot of the bed to unwrap my hand and bandage it tight with a clean shirt sleeve. By the time night came, I was shaking. It felt as if my balance was slightly off center. My hand had stopped throbbing, but I didn't check the dressing. I didn't want to see how clean it was. The lantern was off. Sometime after midnight, I woke to the sound of someone breathing beneath the bed. Each breath long, fluid, wet. Each exhale stretching longer than the last. I froze. The basin at the foot of the bed was half filled again. I hadn't touched it since arriving. The surface of the water was in motion, as if it was climbing. Thin tendrils of liquid crawled upward against the stone, sliding up the rim in curling shapes, trying to crest over. I stood too fast. The floor creaked under my heel. The breathing stopped, but I continued running. I reached the door. The handle was warm, like it was alive. It resisted slightly when I turned it, like skin recoiling from touch. Then, gently, it pulsed in a steady throb. I took my hand back and stepped away. The room smelled of copper and something sweet and raw, like overripe fruit or a sick animal's den. I sat down on the bed and waited for the sun, too scared to look away, and equally as terrified to go out at night, frozen in place by an impossible decision. By morning, my palm had healed without trace, smooth and uniform, like it had never been opened at all. But on the inside of my forearm, faint but visible under the skin, a new mark had surfaced. A sigil, pale and curling, like something once soft and wet, had wrapped around the bone and decided to stay. The second attempt to leave had failed before it started. By midday, I tried every exit I could map. The sloping trail behind the chapel, the ridgeline behind the butcher's lot, the old boundary fence beside the orchard. Each time, I followed the route as far as I dared. Each time, I ended back in the same place. The signpost leaning just slightly to the left. The words Mirror's End burned into it. The town wasn't looping. I checked every landmark, every tree. Things changed subtly between attempts. A path would straighten, a stone would be gone. But the result was the same. There was no path out. What's worse is that each attempt was never stopped. The townsfolk just went about their business, either too programmed into their routines or fully confident I'd never escape. By late afternoon, the sense of containment had shifted into something tighter. I didn't want to admit it yet, but the truth had crept in around the edges. This place wasn't keeping me. It felt like it was absorbing me, piece by piece, thought by thought. So, instead of trying to make discoveries outwardly, I went to thoroughly investigate the town. I decided to try the cellars behind the inn. behind the kitchen, past the warped wooden door, I found a cramped hallway stacked with dry sacks of root vegetables and bundles of brittle herbs. The air was thick with dust and something else, a mineral sweetness like rain over rust. Beneath the sacks, a hatch made of heavy wood and iron brackets swollen shut. I tried to pry it open with a boot and an old tool I found nearby. The hinges groaned, then gave. A burst of heat rolled out, warm, damp, unfamiliar. Beneath were stairs carved into a surface that didn't look like stone or timber. The texture was matte and slightly translucent, reddish, with veins of darker pigment running through it in looping spirals. I couldn't tell if it had been poured, grown, or something between. From below, I sought answers. I hesitated, then started down. The walls of the tunnel were slightly flexible with a reddish tint. It was veined and warm, a hybrid of resin and cartilage, or some natural polymer grown into architecture, a material I'd never seen or heard about. Every few meters, the surface texture changed. In one place, it was smooth like bone. In another, it ridged like a fingerprint stretched across 20 feet. At certain angles, I could see embedded spirals in the walls, like loops of clotting fluid hardened mid-pour. The further I went, the more the air changed. Soon, it was heavy with damp and a taste of iron. Underneath it, there was something sweeter. It reminded me of my sister's first pregnancy, the smell of vitamins, sweat, and milk-soaked laundry. At the bottom, the corridor leveled into a low chamber, its walls sloping inward like a womb mid-contraction. In the center of the room was a waist-high pillar, shaped like a spool, fused to the floor. The surface around the pillar rippled. I stepped back, and a thin channel in the wall slid open behind me, like a vertical mouth opening behind skin sideways. Inside, I saw the start of a staircase spiraling downward, deeper. It felt like this place was offering my answers, yet my gut tightened in warning. I did not go further. Whatever that opening was, it had waited for my presence. Only when I approached did it open. It felt too welcoming. I turned and climbed back out. By the time I reached the hatch, the air above had cooled. Back in the hallway, the inn was still. Lanterns still burned, the desk was manned. The same man, same posture. His eyes seemingly focused on something that wasn't there when I passed. Back in my room, I tossed and turned. I couldn't sleep that night. I heard the basin fill again, slower this time. The day after felt charged, and by nightfall, something had changed in the rhythm of Merrow's End. The town had always felt orchestrated, the repetitive tasks, the choreographed silences. But now the pattern was breaking, or accelerating. The townsfolk no longer moved with the sluggish patience of sleepwalkers. They twitched when they moved, subtle gestures across bodies while they did their routine. A hand wiping a brow here, echoed by another sharpening a blade there, intermingled with an animalistic jitter. Something hiding behind the pacifism, waiting to be opened up. Their expressions slackened, faces softened into a quiet tension, as if something inside them was pushing forward, pressuring the surface of their skin. Eyes bulged slightly, but not with fear, with purpose. It didn't feel like watching a crowd. It felt like standing inside one large thing that had just started to breathe. I backed away from the town square and try the church first, the only place away from the people. But the door was locked. I crossed to the inn. The lights were on and the windows glowed amber, but the latch didn't budge when I twisted it. From inside, I heard the soft click of metal, a lock being turned by hand. Then, quiet. I stepped back into the center of the square. The sky was visible now between rooftops, and I realized something else had shifted. The stars had changed. Their positions were wrong, smeared across the sky like spilled oil dragged by an invisible brush. Some pulsed faintly, in spiral formations I didn't recognize, patterns that made no sense. And the moon glowed red and hung too low, sitting just above the valley rim, as if drawn inward. I turned toward the orchard path, not to leave. I already knew that was impossible, but I needed distance, any distance from the town square, from the coordination, from the idea that I might end up like them. As I walked, I passed the woman hanging rags along a line. Strangely, her head rotated toward me, shifting, the way a plant might reorient towards sunlight. Her body stayed completely still, her eyes didn't blink. They simply opened wider. Further down, two men bent over the same crate, lifting it in perfect synchronization, breath held. I quickened my pace. I didn't make it far. Halfway to the orchard fence, I heard something wet collapse behind me. I turned and saw the strange children from the alley. They stood barefoot in the grass, arms limp at their sides, head tilted eerily left. I watched in frozen horror as they stepped backward, out of themselves, shedding skin like a costume. It fell to the ground with a soft sound, like fabric soaked in broth. What rose from inside was taller and moved clumsily, like it wasn't used to its long limbs. Its face felt unfinished. There was only a shallow curve of smooth red flesh where the nose and eyes should have been. The raw red started to harden. It looked like oxidization, but far too fast. And soon, its gangly frame had weight. A thinner, more emaciated figure of another townsperson, born or revealing its true form as one of the others. It turned his attention to the well in the square. I dove behind an old supply cart behind the fence with a broken wheel. From there, I could see the well and the people around it clearly. Their bodies formed a ring around it. A wet sound filled the air, dripping upward. Then, something hit the top of the cart with a heavy, glancing slap, frightening me. I shifted just enough to see past the wheel. Above me, hovering silently, was the stone basin from my room, suspended in the air, slowly rotating. Its contents, that reddish, half-coagulated water, was draining upward, drawn to an unseen source above the rooftops. The basin itself was perfectly level, floating with intent. And below it, the townsfolk began to hum in harmony, as they each began to slowly crawl into the well. Two broke off from the pack and turned toward me. My eyes widened as I tried to crawl out, but I felt drained of everything. I was unable to move a finger. My vision darkened as they approached and blacked out completely as I saw them reach out to my hiding spot.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
I came to in my room at the inn. The lantern on the desk burned low, flickering against the ceiling like it was struggling to stay lit. I sat up slowly, disoriented by the absence of memory. I couldn't remember anything after hiding beneath the cart. The sheets beneath me were dry, but my clothes clung to my skin. Damp, heavy. I touched my sleeve and brought my fingers to my nose. The same bitter scent from the basin. Old copper, salt, and something sweeter underneath, like boiled milk left too long in the sun. I rolled my sleeve back. The sigil had changed. Where it had been a rough spiral inked like a birthmark, it had now spread, its lines thinner, more intricate, curling like veins across the inside of my arm and wrapping beneath the bicep. The flesh it covered was pink, flushed, and warm to the touch. Not inflamed or wounded, it didn't hurt. If anything, it pulsed with a rhythm I recognized. It had synced to my heartbeat. The hallway outside was quiet, but the air carried a different weight. The building itself had changed. The walls, though still straight, seemed to lean closer, perceptibly, as if pressure had built up behind the plaster. The wood along the trim had darkened with moisture, and the wallpaper at the corners was curling away, exposing seams beneath. There was no one at the front desk this time. I moved, slowly, listening for sound, the creak of footsteps, a whisper, a breath. But the only thing I could hear was the faint creaking of the building itself. Until now, I'd spent every waking moment in Mirror's End trying to leave it, or, failing that, trying to understand it. But the more I moved, the more it moved with me. The more I resisted, the less it needed to react. This town, or whatever had rooted itself beneath it, was methodical, patient. It didn't need obedience or panic. It only needed participation. And I had been participating since the moment I took the key. I thought about the basin, the way it floated above the square, how it turned slowly in place, perfectly level, dripping upward like it was feeding something that existed outside of gravity or time. It hadn't been symbolic. It had been functional. Maybe a sensor, maybe a sacrament, or maybe something simpler. A part of the machine that was building me into whatever came next. If the process couldn't be escaped, maybe it could be disrupted. Maybe there was still something in this system that would break if I pulled too hard on the wrong place. Either way, it was my only option, because all the exits to the inn were locked and sealed. They didn't even budge when pushed, which left one place I could go. The hatch. The rusted handle moved more easily this time, as if it were welcoming me, and it no longer smelled like rot, just damp and meaty. As I ascended, I immediately noticed the change. Before, the tunnel had resembled a resin mold, something grown but still structured. Now, it had softened, like the material was still forming itself. The walls were thicker, rounder, and pulsed ever so slightly under the surface, as if liquid moved within. The air glowed faintly red, as if filtered through capillaries. The further I moved, the warmer it got. The wall gave slightly beneath my fingers, like pushing into a pregnant stomach. something twitched on the other side of the membrane. I looked closer. Behind the translucent flesh, I saw shapes suspended in fluid, a spine without ribs, a mouth, limbs. The smell began to shift. Iron, milk, plastic, skin. It reminded me of neonatal wards, of old birthing rooms, of hospital cribs in the dark. A tunnel widened ahead of me. I stepped into a chamber that sat directly beneath the town center, round and evenly proportioned, like the cavity beneath a joint. The air was warmer here, heavier, and carried a low pressure that pressed against my ears and made my footsteps sound muffled. 7 archways ring the chamber, spaced with mathematical care. Each glowed faintly from within, the light distinct in tone and temperature. 1 radiated a soft arterial red, another carried a sickly gold, like old bile under lamplight. Others glimmered in otherworldly hues, their color shifting when I tried to focus on them directly. At the center stood a low pedestal gown from the same resinous substance as the tunnel. Its surface was smooth in some places and ridged in others, as though it had hardened around objects placed there repeatedly over time. Resting in shallow impressions along its top were several basins. They were identical to the one that had been in my room. Some were filled nearly to the brim with thick, dark fluid that moved slowly, resisting gravity in subtle ways. Others had collapsed inwards, their rims sagging, split, as if they'd been discarded after use. One hovered just above its recess, turning slowly, thin threads of liquid lifting upward from its surface and vanishing into the air above. Behind the pedestal, the black wall curved upward into a wide spiral rendered in hard, blackened resin. The shapes were anatomical, but abstracted. At the spiral's beginning was a human form, proportioned normally, upright and intact. Further along, the form stretched, limbs lengthening beyond balance, joints reoriented for reach rather than stability. Past that, the figure opened, the torso hollowed into lattice work, organs reduced to supporting structures. At the outermost curve, the form no longer resembled a body at all. It folded inward, forming a looped shape, sealed and continuous, like an umbilical coil with no external anchor. Beneath each phase ran a band of minute engraving. Hundreds of names, each carved with care, aligned in a symmetrical way. My name was at the very bottom, like I was the final step, but I was not willing to let that happen. I stepped forward and took hold of the basin marked with the same fine cracking pattern as the one I'd been given. The sigil at its base mirrored the one spreading beneath my skin. It felt warm in my hands, neither fragile nor heavy, balanced in a way that suggested it had been made to be carried. I lifted it and brought it down against the pedestal. The basin didn't break. Its form softened and folded inward, collapsing in on itself like wax losing cohesion, the fluid inside lifting briefly before dispersing into the resin beneath. The pedestal absorbed it without resistance, the impression filling in smoothly, as though the basin had never been there at all. The chamber reacted immediately. The tunnel behind me sealed shut with a thick, muscular contraction that reverberated through the floor. Heat surged through the room, sharp and dry, carrying the scent of scorched calcium and chemical antiseptic. The light within the archways flared, intensifying in color and brightness, and I felt a subtle shift in pressure as something reoriented around me. From one of the arches, a figure stepped forward. It was the man from the inn. He wore the same black garments, though they clung wetly to his frame now, darkened by fluid that seeped steadily from his joints, making it look more like a priest's gown. His posture had changed. The alignment of his spine was too fluid, each movement rolling smoothly into the next, as though his bones had learned a different way to cooperate. He stopped a few steps from the pedestal and raised his arm. The sigil along his forearm had fully bloomed, expanded into a complex network of curves and channels that pulsed visibly beneath the skin. It was complete in a way mine was not, its symmetry precise, its rhythm steady. When he opened his mouth, no words came. Instead, a second face pressed forward from within his throat, small and undeveloped, eyes sealed beneath thin folds of skin. It watched without expression, its presence explanatory rather than threatening, like this was simply the next demonstration in a process already underway. I stepped back instinctively, and my shoulder brushed the spiral wall behind me. The moment my arm brushed the spiral wall, I felt the contact register like a pressure plate engaging deep within the structure. The sigil in my arm flared, not in pain, in clarity, and a single word came to mind. Prophecy. At first, I thought I was still in the chamber, but the air was too still. The light had shifted. There was no tension anymore. Every basin, including the one I had tried to destroy, now floated above the pedestal, hovering inches above their depressions. Their surfaces were calm, their contents full, held in suspension, like they knew the order of things and were waiting for their turn. Around the chamber stood the people of Mirror's End, the innkeeper, the cleric, even the beings the children became. Before them, a basin. Each bore a sigil, fully bloomed across their flesh, some on their forearms, others on their backs, throats, even their cheeks. They raised their hands, or their shoulders, or the backs of their necks, aligning the sigils over the bowls. And then, they poured. Whatever it was, it came out slow, thick with motion, lightless and impossibly dense. How identity might behave if it could be distilled, a slowing off of selfhood in liquid form. One by one, the townsfolk offered their essence into the air. The strands hovered, weightless, then bent upward, all of them into a single hollow space above the pedestal. Something was coming through. It didn't descend, it condensed. At first, it looked like vapor, catching the threads of fluid midair. But then, structure took hold. A spine without vertebrae, mouths folding over mouths, arms that ended in gestures, not hands. Wherever it looked, the air rotated into spirals, like water circling a drain above a sinkhole. Its eyes were sigils, opening and closing like mouths tasting the room. It sang without breath, notes folding backwards, inverted hymns. But there was an underlying sound, the only thing that had anything I could recognize from this known world. It sounded vaguely, like a baby crying, echoed and distant, the sounds of new beginnings. Images played across it like projections through wet silk, failed shapes, partial transformations, but undoubtedly, rebirth. It wasn't creating followers, it was remaking them in its twisted image, an imperfect ideal sold as salvation. The last basin remained untouched. Mine. I thought back to the names. Mine filled out in the bottom corner, making a perfect symmetrical list. The final tally counted up from years of dedication. The final piece of the puzzle. The vision pulled inward, tightened. The god, if that was what it was, paused. In expectation. I saw myself across the chamber, stepping forward, my own sigil fully opened, bleeding that same substance into the air. The basin accepted it. The cycle completed. And just as the god opened one final eye, not like the others, something clearer, something meant to see, the vision broke. The spiral wall fell away from my shoulder. The chamber snapped back into focus. The air had changed. They were already moving me toward my bowl. I was being carried. Hands beneath my arms, more on my legs, lifting with a kind of reverence. The basin sat ahead of me, floating where I'd seen it in the vision. Thin strands of fluid veined outward from its sides, connecting to the central hollow above the pedestal like umbilicals. The god hadn't reformed yet, but something pressed against the air. A weight, a presence waiting to condense again. My forearm burned, the sigil had begun to open. They lowered me toward the basin. The others were already in place. The clerk, the woman with the roots, the children. Their heads bowed, their arms slack. Each stood beside a filled bowl, the sigil still weeping faint trails of essence into the air. The moment my skin touched the rim, the basin flared. My sigil stung open like a blister under pressure, the heat radiating inward. I felt something shift inside me, detail being pulled forward. My bearers left to join their own basins, threads being pulled from them as they neared, until full strands of their being were slowly allowed to be drained. I thought I was locked in, as they had been, but in a final push of defiance, I pulled away. The draw slowed, but didn't stop. Threads had already left me, thin and shimmering. I slammed my arm against my chest, staggering back from the pedestal. Then, I turned and struck the pedestal itself, the root, the connection. A sound cracked across the chamber like reality buckling. Above, the forming god twisted in place, its limbs unspooling too far, the spirals in its eyes collapsing inward. It didn't scream, it folded, its mouthless shape giving off a sound like pressure violently equalizing, a howl of absence, incompleteness. The resin walls split, venting heat and chemicals smelling steam. Basins shattered one by one, their contents lifting skyward before reversing midair, slamming down in sprays that hit the floor, the walls, the townsfolk. They convulsed. Every single one. Backs arching, joints locking, muscles seizing beneath skin that blistered from within. But they didn't scream, already too drained of whatever was leaving them to move of their own volition. Their sigils flared with light before dimming to ash. Some dropped to their knees, others collapsed backward, arms open in quiet release as their bodies twitched and clenched over and over until motion drained from them entirely. They didn't die, but there was nothing left to move them. Whatever they had given, they had truly given. There was no strength left to hold themselves up. The archways flared one last time and sealed, one by one, behind sharp pulses of red light. They were one offering too short. Whatever they were trying had failed by a small fraction, minute, but enough. The god collapsed inward, its body liquefying mid-air into a film of suspended sheen, hovering above the pedestal like the top layer of still blood. The air smelled like scorched milk and iron. Not rot, failed birth. I ran. The tunnel walls still flexed, and the scent of the thing's retreat clung to everything. But no one followed. No one stopped me. No one even looked. They couldn't. They had spent themselves in full, and the system no longer had their final piece. It had broken. I came through the same slope I descended days ago, though the incline felt steeper now, the soil brittle and warm beneath my hands. My lungs burned, the air itself had changed, thick with a chemical tang that had haunted the tunnels below. The thing that had risen and failed to root, something that tried to live. Mirror's End was collapsing. The town's core had buckled inward, roofs lay folded over themselves, walls had split, from withdrawal, as if a structure that had never been meant to hold shape was finally letting go. Streets I'd walked were now cracked wide open, bleeding slow streams of red fluid that pulsed and congealed like clotting arteries. Veins, thick, root-like cords of glistening tissue ran along beams and foundation stones, twisting around doorframes, threading through shutters and window panes. They wrapped the town square like vines in full bloom, smothering the old stonework beneath a living lattice of wet pressure. Near the collapsed inn, the basin I had once watched from bed now lay shattered in the dirt. It hissed faintly, cooling from a long burn. A soft plume of vapor curled up and was lost in the morning stillness, followed by the faint sound of wet settling. At the edge of the valley, I found the forest untouched. The trees still swayed with early light filtering through their branches. Leaves shifted with calm, natural rhythm. The trail of dew caught the sun. Everything beyond the town looked exactly as it had when I first arrived. The air didn't warp around it. The ground didn't pull me back. Whatever had bound me to Mirror's End, whatever looped the land into a closed circuit, had been broken. I saw the same tree line, the same rocky outcrop where I'd parked, but they no longer held that dreamlike haze. They were just trees, just stone. I started walking. As I reached the place where the road once rejected me, where I had turned back again and again, I stepped forward. My foot touched gravel, solid, cold, and undistorted, and a sharp pain erupted up my arm. I staggered, clutching my forearm, breath caught. When I pulled back my sleeve, the sigil was gone, but the skin beneath was red and raw, the skin not carved away, but seared to the edge of peeling. The lines of it still echoed faintly in the damaged tissue, but they no longer pulsed, no longer claimed me. Pain started to root, but relief came with it, as it felt natural, a real wound, not one instilled through something I couldn't comprehend. I stood there a moment longer, letting the air reach me fully. Then, I ran. Halfway down the switchback, I stopped to breathe and turn back. From this vantage, I could see the whole valley. The red tendrils were still shifting, still rippling across the earth. They moved without pattern now, unraveling, struggling. And then, without warning, the town flattened. The collapse wasn't explosive. It was a surrender. The way lungs deflate after breath has left. The veins dissolved into vapor, even the wooden sign, Mirror's End, for those returning, fell into itself. All of it vanished. in its place. Clean dirt. A shallow depression where something had almost happened, where something had tried to be born. The world looked untouched. But I knew better. A few days passed. I walked until signal returned. The organization responded quickly, clearly relieved. They said they nearly sent someone to check, having understood that remoteness had probably caused the delay. To them, it was no harm done. I had just been delayed due to natural causes or work causes. I filed the report. Recommendation: do not pursue development. Rationale: unstable terrain, deep sinkhole risk, evidence of active mineral leaching and soil instability, poor investment, high liability. It was clean, technical, and irrefutable. It wasn't a lie, of course, but enough of the truth remained in the language to keep others away, leaving out the parts that would get me investigated. They accepted it without question. I should have felt victorious. Instead, I sat in my apartment days later, staring at the blank page of a confession, wanting some way to document what I'd seen while it was still fresh, wondering how to categorize what I'd seen. The libation, the names etched in sequence, the thing that had formed from them. It hadn't demanded worship or sacrifice. It had simply wanted to happen. Each person, each sigil, each basin, a step in a process that refines shape and memory into something more. A filtration of what made us human ascended into eldritch rebirth. I remember the diagram, the spiral of becoming, the hollowing, the folding, the return to origin through replication. What was its end goal? Transcendence? A new age on Earth? Some second genesis we weren't supposed to witness? Or maybe a return to something older than our known history? I don't know, and I don't think I ever will. And that scares me.